Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
The Sunday Grill on Beat.
Well, some people relish cozy evenings in, others find the darker days, bad weather and all of that a little bit harder. So here to help us through the emotional sludge of winter and make our days a little bit brighter is Laura Stafford. You're very welcome to the Sunday Grill, Laura.
Thank you so much for having me, Aoife.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do and a bit about your own wellness journey.
Well, at the moment, I have a business called Laura's Sanctuary. It's located in Wifford Hotel in Wexford Town. And I suppose, how did I get into that? When I was 17, I became a beautician. So there was always a love for me to help people to feel good. It was like what I was always passionate about. And I seemed to have a bit of a knack for it when I was growing up. So in the beginning, I started a beauty career and I did that for 22 years. And it was only in my 30s that kind of this whole other world of Reiki, sound healing and general wellness kind of came into my field. Like I started to feel myself that I wasn't naturally as maybe happy as I had been when I was younger. I had quite a busy business at this stage. I had my own beauty salon for 12 years in total. And I had some kids and life just got really busy and I myself just started to struggle a little bit. So my own mother had trained in Reiki and she introduced me to Reiki in the beginning. And I found that like was just, it's such an amazing tool for people to be able to help to regulate your emotions and to help to balance like your own inner peace, like your own chakras and your own energy. So I trained in Reiki myself then when I was 35 and then I trained in sound healing and eventually last year I decided to just focus just on the wellness side and I closed the beauty salon and I opened up the sanctuary. That's what I do for my work at the moment now.
Sounds like quite the journey and I love that it's called a sanctuary. So do you think that, you know, at this time of year, we should all create our own little sanctuaries and nice spaces in our lives in order to, I guess, have somewhere cozy and nice and positive to go?
Yeah, definitely. I think like that this is a time of year that naturally we're invited to slow down. Like if we look at nature, everything is slowing down now. If we look at the animals, everything slows down. Some animals hibernate. So I think if we connect with nature ourselves, and a word that I only came across maybe last year sometime is this Danish word called hygge. Have you heard of this?
Do you know what, Laura? I absolutely love it. I am a big fan of hygge. So tell everyone about hygge and what do they do in Denmark?
Well, for me, the way I perceived it was like creating this like warm, cozy environment, like a space for you that's going to facilitate you to be able to relax and enjoy like the simple pleasures in life. So I think this is really a time of year when we should try and get that hygge vibe. For me, the way I translate it is I like to connect back to all of the senses, you know, so what we can see, like I love to have candles lighting around or the fire lighting, soft lighting, the touch for me, I love the fluff, you know, fluffy blankets, nice socks.
I'm a massive fan of fluffy things. And
yeah, me too.
You know, those snuggy kind of snuddies. There we have it.
I have an array of them. My husband put hooks on the back of the door and we can barely open the door now. I have so much stuff hanging.
And what else were you saying there in terms of senses?
For the senses, then with the smell, like I'm an aromatherapist myself and I make like aromatherapy candles. And so I love aromatherapy. My signature blend is like lavender, rose, geranium and sweet orange. So that's something that's going to relax and unwind us. But also the orange gives like a nice uplifting as well. So I think to bring in some nice scents and then the sounds so we can have, like this morning, the rain was so heavy, like that in itself was just a beautiful sound. But we can have like nice relaxing music, or I use the wooden wicks in the candles. So sometimes you can even just listen to the candle or the crackle of the fire. And then I think for me, like the taste wise, like to bring in that final sense, I love like warm drinks at this time of year. especially if you can get something immune boosting, you know, like your lemon and ginger tea, or I love cacao, you know, so I drink cacao every day. And that really helps me like to quieten the mind, open up the heart and to relax.
In nature, it's a time of year, you said, that tends to slow down. Yet when you have Christmas, and even if you have kids, mm-hmm. Christmas exams, and if you're working in finance, it's Q4. For humans, for the human race, it can be quite a busy time of year. So how do you find that balance?
Yeah, I think we do sometimes go the opposite way than maybe what nature intended us to do. And sometimes I think like there's so much sickness around Christmas time, you know, that's why I think it's nice to focus on the immune boosting things from now, because I think sometimes this is how we can all end up so sick when we're fighting against nature. But for me, I definitely like to, in the morning time, like to witness the sun as early as you can in the morning. So this is going to like let our body clock connect with nature as well and your circadian rhythm. So just noticing the sun in the morning, if you can get out and look at the sun, even through the clouds, I think that can be really powerful. And I like to naturally go to bed like a little bit earlier at this time of year, and maybe give myself a little bit more time in the morning. Because I think just to do some simple practices, like at the moment, I'll just do a little bit of journaling in the morning. So there'll be the first question is like the things that you're grateful for. So automatically, like, you know, you're going to bring yourself up a little bit, like in your own vibration, when you think of the things that you're grateful for, and setting out then a purpose for your day. So rather than maybe coming into the day going, oh God, I have to do this and I have to do this, it's like, right, my purpose for the day is to do these things. I'm going into this day knowing that this is my purpose, and like excited for what I have to do. And then I just do a couple of reflections at night on the day, like how the day went, like writing down the good things, and then maybe focusing on tomorrow, what could I do? For me, it can often be more movement. So I'm like, tomorrow, Laura, just move more, do a little bit more exercise, you know. So, yeah, I think that can be really powerful to do, the little bit of gratitude, focusing on the purpose.
They're lovely tips there for people, Laura. And do you think at this time of year, when it is darker and when things are a bit more hectic, that it's more important than ever to try and incorporate even one of those in your day-to-day lives?
Yeah, 100%. Like I do this thing called the Self-Love Club through my work. So I will take like the next lot will be in December, say. So for the first 12 days of December, I'm going to do like this online Self-Love Club, where we'll just take 5 minutes every morning, because I think that's when it can really kind of get busy for people. So I'll say, just give yourself this 5 minutes. I do it like through WhatsApp, so you can do it any time of the day that suits you. But, and then I'll share different practices, different rituals that you can do to just make sure that you're staying grounded and keeping like your nervous system relaxed, and how we can like just keep ourselves feeling good as we go into the busier time. But I do this all throughout the year, just sometimes in person and sometimes online. So I think everybody is different, like people will thrive at different times of the year. But for me, it's always keeping an eye on your emotions. Like, don't let yourself get so busy that you don't know how you feel. And there's some like really amazing tips. There's like this emotional guidance scale, and that was brought out by Abraham Hicks, where you can just check in and you can just see like, what feelings have you been feeling? And then it's like, it can help you see where you are on the emotion and guidance scale. And if we can just keep checking in with this to make sure that we are feeling balanced. And if we aren't, then we can amp up these little tips and rituals that we can do to help ourselves to feel good. So having a good understanding of our own emotions is like a really good place to start, I think.
Yeah, because in fairness, when things get hectic, you're literally running from pillar to post, and it's so easy to not make that little bit of time.
Yeah, that's what used to happen to me. Like before I knew all this, I'd be busy and I had my own business and everything was going great. And then all of a sudden, like the lowest emotion on this guidance scale would be like to feel depressed. But all of a sudden it would sneak up on me, do you know? I'm like, oh my God, I'm feeling really depressed. Whereas I think when you have, even just give yourself this little bit of time, it doesn't take long to check in with how you're feeling. And then you might notice when you're like the signs way before you actually feel so low. So you don't let yourself to get there.
What would you say to the person now that is or was like you a few years ago, that's absolutely in the trenches at the moment? What would you say to them in terms of a starting point?
Well, I think it's just to remember to fill your own cup. That was the one thing for me. Do you know that? Like, I thought that I could just keep on giving, but like that you have to give back to yourself. So you have to remember to just fill your own cup. It can be really simple things, you know, it can be doing maybe some yoga or some breath work. It can be the gratitude practices. It can just be like connecting with that huganess. And when we connect with all our senses, that's actually being really mindful. So just bring yourself mindful into the present moment and allowing then when you're in the present moment to fill up your own cup rather than always jumping from the past to the future, you know, being really busy in the moment, just taking that time for yourself and it'll ripple out all around you.
Well, on that note, I think we'll wrap up. Laura, thank you so much for speaking to us this morning on the Sunday Grill. Hopefully we can all bring some brightness into our days now as the days get darker with those fantastic tips from you.
Amazing. Thank you so much for having me.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat.
It's the Sunday Grill, and if you're looking for something nice to go along to in the next week or so, Europe's first and only youth organised festival for readers and writers is returning to Waterford City, running from the 7th to the 9th of November. This year's Lit Fest features writers, poets and wordsmiths of all kinds from across the country. So joining me to chat about this year's festival, we have
B
and Nathan
and Alana.
So first of all, I'll go to you first, Alana. The guys here, I believe, are the ones that are organising this year's programme. But tell us a little bit about the Lit and I guess its origins.
Yeah, so firstly, thanks for having us. We're delighted to be on the Sunday Grill. And to tell you a little bit about the history of the Lit, in 2016, a group of us were doing creative writing with Waterford Youth Arts in the City Library. And Waterford felt like a very glum, depressing place to be as a teenager. And every week we kind of had this respite in the library where we'd get together and be creative. But we kind of found that there wasn't really a place for us outside of that library space where we could hang out, you know, share our artwork, do something positive for our community. So we pestered our fabulous creative writing mentor, Emer Chasty, and pitched a festival, really. And it kind of went from there. We figured out how to do all the graphic design ourselves. We didn't know what we were doing with press releases. We learned how to do those. And it really became this kind of like grassroots festival that grew into something much bigger than any of us ever thought it would be. And we were very lucky that there were some very supportive adults in Waterford Youth Arts who just kind of believed in the idea and were like, okay, here's a bit of money. See how you get on. The festival has gone from strength to strength, and we've had over 50 young people come through the programme and over 100 artists come and visit us from around the country. We have a very expansive alumni network of young people who have gone on to bigger and better things and will always cite the Lit as something that they're incredibly proud of. And like, that's amazing. I know for myself personally.
Yeah,
like,
I was going to say, so you yourself were one of the young people wanting to express themselves and have a space to write and to perform, because I believe spoken word would be your forte. But for you, how much did it shape you and your life?
It completely changed my life. Like, I cannot emphasise enough. I went to UCC down in Cork. I got a scholarship to go study there. The Lit was what I got my scholarship on. It was one of the reasons why I got into university. I took a workshop at the Lit Festival in the first year with a poet called Aaron Fornoff, and I wrote a poem that ended up going viral and quite literally did change my life and change my career trajectory. I have so much to thank the Lit for. I got to go to New York. I got to work with Nile Rodgers and the We Are Family Foundation over there. I got to present an award to Dolly Parton back in the day. You know,
iconic guys.
It was pretty cool. Like, you know, and they recognized that we were targeting a really important area of the global goals when it comes to education, because we cared about literacy. We cared about self-expression. We cared about mental health. And we were activists as well. And we were, you know, we just wanted to be proud of the city that we came from. And I'm really like, I'm really excited working with these young people, because the festival has changed over the years, and of course it would, because different young people are going to make it like it's their own thing, and that's the point of it.
They put their stamp on it.
And I've definitely come in with my old ways to a very great bunch of young people, and they've taught me all of the TikToks and memes and
all the TikToks
6-7 apparently. I don't know what that means. The guys have been amazing. Like, they're so enthusiastic. They have such a great vision for the festival. They're exactly the young people we imagined would take it over in, you know, 8 years later. So like I feel so lucky to get to come to work every day, and these are the people I work with.
Okay, so I'm going to head over to the co-organisers of this year's event. So first of all, where are you from and what got you interested in the Lit?
I'm from right around Ballybricken, and I got interested in the Lit, I think it was 2 years ago now, and I kind of did it to put some experience into something, and I really, really liked music, and there was an open mic and there were so many new experiences, and I was like, I want to try that. And Ollie Breslin, the man that he is, continuously sent me emails, sent me messages, until I was like, okay Ollie, I get it, and I will organize something. So sometimes if you want to do something and he knows you want to do something, you're going to do that, whether or not you're nervous, whether or not you're scared. He gives so many amazing opportunities to so many young people, and I didn't know how to write lyrics. I didn't really know how to go about things, and poetry and music are so intertwined. Learning how to write good lyrics and learning how to express yourself is so important, and that's what the Lit is, pretty much.
Now we'll move over to Nathan. Mm-hmm. You are co-coordinator, but I believe you're also the festival hype man.
Yes.
Tell us what the festival hype man does.
Hype man, hype man is kind of this kind of role where you're kind of like the cheerleader for a Lit Fest, and you're just kind of like giving up, kind of hyping everyone up, you know, if everyone's nervous, you go, come on, you can do this, like, you got this. You put a lot of high energy to it. You know, I have a bit of experience with acting, so, you know, I know how to get energy and all that stuff. And that's kind of what the hype man is.
And how did you get involved, or how did you come across it?
How did I get involved? So I came across it when me and B, we went up to Belfast. We were doing a different project, and Alana was with us. She was doing photography for them. And I was stuck on the train for a few hours going up to Belfast past Dublin. On that train up to Belfast, and me and Alana were just talking. And I was talking to her like, oh, I really like script writing and I really like filmmaking and acting and all that sort of stuff. And she's like, well, I have this thing called Lit Fest, and it's like a thing for young writers. And I'm like, oh, really? Tell me more. And then we did the first meeting, and then it was just kind of
catapulted from there. Mm. And in terms of you and what you're interested, because I think sometimes people, when they think of writing, they're immediately thinking about someone writing a book or someone writing an article or something like that. But for you, what sort of writing would you be interested in?
I'm into filmmaking, right, which is in the style of screenwriting, you know, scripts of other stuff. I'm more on that side of it. I was never really a book person. I had dyslexia, so I kind of struggled with reading books and all that stuff. Like most people you meet in LitFest are book readers. I'm kind of the one that stands out near with that sort of thing.
So tell us a little bit about this year's programme. First of all, B, you tell us what you're looking forward to or what people might be interested in.
My top things I'm looking forward to is we have some amazing authors coming down that we are not only going to get to hear from and chat with, but we're also going to get signing opportunities, which is absolutely incredible. Some of the amazing people are Derek Landy, with Skullduggery Pleasant, which I think is just a book so well known throughout so many ages. This is an all ages event well, and I think it's really
important.
It's free. And it's free.
It's so free. And there are limited spaces, so you should book now.
Yeah, Adiba Jagradar, she's amazing. She wrote The Henna Wars, which was listed as one of the top 100 young adult books of all time.
Wow.
And she's from up the road, lads.
She's from Dublin. She writes amazing books, pretty much based off her life and her culture and her experiences. They are so beautiful, and reading them are such a pleasure. And of course, I'm also really, really excited for the open mic, because I have a 20-minute set and I'm so excited to play at it.
You're going to play original music?
I'm going to be playing some original music.
Woo! Amazing.
But I'm super excited to hear and see and, you know, experience other people's creativity as well. Mm. If you are a young person and you're out there right now and you find solace only in books or only in music or only in screenwriting, you go, I want to do that, but I don't know how. If you come to the Lit, we can help you find out how. You might find your tribe with us.
Yeah.
And what are you, Mr. Hype Man, looking forward to the most over the coming days?
I love the workshops. I'm really excited because me and another guy in Litfest, Evan, we are festival supporters for this one really known filmmaker in Dublin named Carol Offsis. And she's going to be doing a workshop in film. I'm really excited for that. But I'm mostly excited for is the welcome and the intros because I'll be performing in Litfest out there.
For the events, all ages can come along.
So for the workshops, 14 to 19, same with the open mic. But other than that, everyone's welcome. Come along. We're welcoming families along. All of our events are family friendly. But the workshops, there's limited spaces. So I would encourage people to book now because I don't want people to be disappointed. There's only a few spaces left. And we just want to make sure that people between 14 and 19 really get the attention that they deserve. Yeah, so that's kind
okay,
of the jazz.
I'm gonna put your public speaking to the test. Give me a pitch now of why you think people should come.
I think you should come to Litfest is because it really worked for me. If like you're looking something like a kid at my age at 15, if you're looking something, you're tired of playing video games all day. You're like, man, I really want to do something. Like I have these creative thoughts in my head, and I want to show them to the whole world. I think you should definitely come to Lit and as well join WIA Water for Youth Arts. Because we have loads of workshops that will help you in filmmaking, drama, art, and creative writing.
How about yourself, B? What's your pitch?
If you're bored.
You're bored.
I'm going to restart that. Okay.
No, I like that.
I like that. That's really funny. Yeah.
If you're bored and you're sitting at home and you feel like Waterford or wherever you are in Ireland, or across Europe, if you're willing to fly, is...
Or the rest of the Southeast.
Yeah. The rest of the Southeast.
The rest of the Southeast.
And you're feeling like your voice isn't being heard, come to the Lit, and not only will you find a way to express your voice, you'll find people who want to listen to you, because your creativity is needed and wanted in a world that you might feel like is silencing you. And you are welcome, and we want you. We want you at the Lit. We want you in workshops, and we want you on our social media.
Yes, woo! We do.
Okay, so anyone wants to book events, where should they go?
They should go to thelit.org. We also are on Eventbrite. And if you want to like keep up to date with everything, there's also all of the links are on our social media. So The Lit Festival on everything.
The Sunday Grill on Beat.
Well, really, we shouldn't really call it Halloween. Really, we should call it Summer's End or Samhain. Because, of course, this is the end of the year. It's the Celtic New Year. So it's a very significant festival and something that's been celebrated on this island for thousands of years. Samhain, I think, dates back a couple of thousand years, and maybe as long as 4,000 or 5,000 years, who knows. Their true Samhain is actually somewhere around the 9th of November, actually. Samhain was never really just one night, it was a period of time, but over the centuries, of course, calendars have shifted and changed. And if you were to visit some of our sacred sites, like for example, the Hill of Uisneach, you'll find that they're holding their festivities over the 9th of November, so it's a little bit later in. But personally, I feel like Samhain being Summer's End is whenever the weather starts to shift. There's something that happens at the end of October when that cold northern wind starts to blow and you really get that feel of winter, the smell in the land changes. It's different, you know, there's a magic that comes over it.
Okay. And if you can explain for me, I suppose, when it first came about, how it has evolved, I suppose, over the years.
The earliest stories of Samhain tell from our ancient myths, or come from our ancient myths. And it tells of a time when the Tuatha De Danann and the Fir Bolg walked this land, lived here, these magical people that lived on this land. And they were attacked regularly by a tribe called the Fomorians, who lived on the west of Ireland. And every Samhain, they would demand a tax of a third of all the children born, a third of all the dairy, and a third of all of the crops grown that year. Everything was meant to finish at Samhain. So no more foraging. Anything left on the land belongs to the land. All the cattle are locked up. All of the winter food pile is in. The winter fire stock is in. All of this work is done. And today, I'm sure a lot of your listeners there now will have the heating oil ready in the tank. They'll have the
the winter duvets down. They'll have the winter woolies down. We're coming into stew and soup weather. So some things don't change, but some things do change. And I think one of the loveliest things about Samhain is this idea that we're all preparing for winter just as our ancestors prepared for centuries.
You were saying there as well something about kind of different things you can do.
Well, there's three core elements to Samhain. Number one is that essentially this is a food festival. It's one of the four quarter festivals, each one linked with food. So Imbolc in the spring, you have dairy. At Bjeltna at May, it's all about beef. At Lunasa, which is in August, it's all about the grain. And this is the final harvest of the year. This is the festival of fruits, nuts and berries. So I always try to encourage people to buy something local, not just one thing if they can. They can buy lots of local things. For example, I adore Bean and Goose chocolate, which is made here in Wexford. I love Salt Rock dairy milk, which is so thick and creamy. And of course, you can't beat a good potato. And of course, being from Wexford, it has to be Stafford's. So you find your local producers, find your local artisan, go to your local farmer's market, make a point of getting something from locally to have on your Halloween feast or your dinner. So making Culcannon from local potatoes and local cabbage that you bought at the farmer's market. The second thing you can do is have an ancestor's altar, because this is a time, this is of course this thin time when the land between the land of the living and the land of the dead is at its thinnest. So this is a wonderful time to remember friends and family. So in our house, we always have an ancestor's altar. This would be a feature of pictures or mementos of friends or family, even pets. And when my children were growing up, it was a wonderful organic way to teach them about death and how we remember our family members. And it was very easy for my mum to pick up a picture of her grandmother and tell a story, you know. And then the third thing, well, it's a perfect time to cast a spell. Samhain is the Celtic New Year, as I mentioned earlier. And so our ancestors, they believed in the laws of nature. Everything starts in the dark. The new day starts when the sun sets. The seed starts when it's down under the ground. Life starts when it's dark inside the womb. So this is a time when we can set intentions. And one of the easiest ways to do this is to simply write your intentions down. And maybe we won't all have a bonfire, but everybody can light a candle and burn it. And as you burn it, it sends your intentions out there. And one really fun way of doing it is write it on a piece of paper. Place some cotton wool on top of your piece of paper and sprinkle some cress seeds. Some people believe that as the cress grows, your spell will come true. So it's a fun thing to do. You can do it with kids as well.
Yeah, I love that. It's so different, isn't it? It's nice to do something a bit more, if you want to call it traditional or Irish, you know.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. No. Because like, you know, I think Halloween has become so far removed from what Samhain was. Samhain was literally a gratitude festival, if you want, saying thank you for providing Mother Earth, for providing enough food to get us through the winter. And it's about honouring what the land looks like at this time of the year. And on this island, Eira or Eru was a goddess. Our ancestors worshipped this island as a mother. And at this point in time, well, she becomes the crone. She hits menopause. This is where the Wicked Witch, the origins of the Wicked Witch, but she's hit menopause. So she might be a little bit sharper, a little bit cooler with you, but really what it is that she's letting you know, she's done her work. She's given us so much food. It's her time now to sit back and relax a little bit and have her little rest. So it's honoring all of those things. It's honoring the fact that our ancestors might return to visit us. It's honoring the ancestors that survived multiple winters so that we could be here today, which is a much, much more fulfilling and lovely festival to hold, much more meaningful.
Lorraine, that's brilliant. Thanks so much for all of that, the insight into Samhain.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat.
It's Sunday morning and you're listening to Beat. After 7 years, Lily Allen is back with a bang. She released her new album, West End Girl, on Friday, which has caused quite the stir.
And now we're all here. We've moved to New York. We found a nice little rental near a sweet little school. It was how you grabbed your phone back right out of my
Joining me to review this album, West End Girl, and chat all things about Lily Allen and the little story behind this album is presenter of Irish Beats, Ava. On first listen, are you a fan of this album?
I am. I'm absolutely blown away by this album. When somebody said Lily Allen is back after 7 years, I was like, oh boy, here we go. It's going to be more of the same kind of middle of the road, cookie cutter stuff. And then I got a text from someone saying, Ava, have you listened to this album? I was like, ah, not really. They were like, go listen to it now. I was like, oh, why? They were like, the lore is incredible.
Okay, talk about the lore. So we heard in that montage there something about text messages and it's starting off lovey-dovey, moving to a house. And by the end, we had that song. Is it Non-Monogamy or something like that?
Non-Monogamy. I really struggled to say that.
Okay, tell us about the lore.
So the whole lore is that she was married to an actor. His name is David Harbour, who you might know from Stranger Things. He played the character Hopper in Stranger Things. And she was married to him for quite a number of years. But basically, they decided that they were going to have an open marriage. They were going to have an open relationship. Reading between the lines, it was kind of because her job was based in the UK and his job was based in the US. And they were apart so much of the time that they decided that they would have an open marriage. But the whole point of the open marriage was that they could, let's say, meet their physical needs as long as they didn't have an emotional connection with their other partner. But that was not the case.
And the internet went wild. My God, the amount of TikToks and reels and everything else dissecting the ins and outs of this relationship, theories, etc. But Lily Allen has, to an extent, put the record straight, hasn't she?
Oh, all you need to do is listen to the album. Listen to the lyrics. Like, as you were saying, in the beginning, the very first song on the album is West End Girl, which is the name of the album. So title track, you know, we found a nice little rental near a sweet little school. You know, that it's kind of painting this perfect picture of where the marriage came from. There's another line in it saying you found a brownstone and said you want it, it's yours. It's kind of showing this perfect marriage and their perfect life and their perfect city. And the whole thing is ended with her end of a phone call. Now, like, this absolutely floored me because you can just hear this kind of, it's kind of, okay, I don't know how I feel about that. But so you can kind of tell something is just about to go horrendously wrong.
This is the first track that you're talking about, this first track.
That is just in the first track. So by the time I made it to the end of the first track, I was like, this is going to be juicy. And she didn't disappoint. It's no holds barred. And the timing on the album is impeccable because you can see her kind of going through this emotional roller coaster of what was to be the end of her marriage, or near the end of it anyway, because the second track is Ruminating. And the timeline in this is just so impeccable because you can tell, like, West End Girl, she gets that phone call. Then Ruminating, she's talking about lying in her bed and kind of thinking about what just happened. And it's like, whoa, you can sense all of these emotions. And then you have it's nearly panicky when you listen to it. It's not getting faster, but it feels like it is. It feels like it's building up as a panic attack.
It literally sounds like anxiety.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Ruminating, being coming up with mad concoctions in your head that will stress you out.
Yeah, literally. And then she goes into the third song, which is Sleepwalking, which is really sad, actually. I think it's kind of like the reality of it hits her. You know, there's a direct quote, "You made me think it was in my head and nothing to do with them girls in your bed." She's talking there about how
she was gaslit, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, her partner really made her feel like, actually, this is your fault. It's your fault I'm going off and sleeping with all these other people, and how that affected her. So Sleepwalking is like it's a sad track when you listen to it.
I love Tennis, which was the second song in that montage there. Reason being, she basically shows the receipts. She's not just, this is when she has the proof, the Instagram messages, and she's dishing out those receipts.
Yeah, and this is where you really see the rules that they had on the open relationship coming into play. You know, you could have a physical relationship with someone else, but this obviously, he had built up like an emotional connection with someone. And really cleverly in Tennis, she talks about Who the Hell is Madeline? Who the Hell is Madeline? And the very next song on the album is called Madeline, where she doesn't address her husband, she addresses the other woman in the relationship, which is absolute mastery.
Minus all of the tea and the lore and the story and the fact she's dishing out all of the information in this album, musically, what is it like?
It's almost like you can see her character developing or redeveloping or changing how she's seeing things as the album goes on. So when you listen to like West End Girls, which is the very first song on the album, like you have that very much like showgirl, you know, perfect life. You'd nearly expect the like the red velvet curtains to open. Like it's a very show song. And like that, my favorite song on the album is, let me try say it, Non-Monogamummy.
Non-Monogamummy, is it?
Non-Monogamummy, that's the one.
Well, Mammy, if she were Irish.
If she were Irish. But that's my favourite song on the album because it has that real old school Lily Allen, like LDN smile, tongue in cheek. She's very, like, she's laying it flat, but it's funny. It's almost borderline comical, but it's just so Lily Allen. But there's other songs on it that are very sad, very stripped back, very bare, very raw songs, which just goes to show what a mastery is in this, because none of them seem out of place. Going from one extreme to the other and they all just slot in perfectly is just pure mastery.
Do you know, when I listened to it as well for the first time, now granted, as you said there are a lot of changes in it, I was getting a bit of Charlie XCX, and I don't know, is that because maybe Charlie was inspired by Lily to an extent, or is Lily now taking back more inspiration from Charlie? I don't know if you got that at all.
Yeah. You listen to Girls So Confusing and you listen to, I'm just going to say Palace. I'm not going to.
We're going to say P-word Palace, but we can't say this at P-word this time of the
Palace.
Morning on radio.
Yes,
yet.
It's a little bit. But you listen to those two songs and structurally they are actually very similar. And you can see them like weaving their way in. But it's kind of like a symbiosis, like as with all artists. You're inspired by one person who's inspired by someone else and they're inspired by you. And it'll all come full circle. So I think, yeah, you're right. But I did see this incredible TikTok the other day of someone saying, okay, that's it. You know, Brat Girl Summer is over. It's time for Lily Allen Fall. I was like, that's brilliant.
Okay, this is what Lily Allen herself said about the album. She said that it took her life falling apart for her to find her authentic voice as a music artist, which is very much a theme throughout. She mentioned it's dark at times, it's gritty. She's kind of laying it all out there. Lily Allen says some of the album is based on truth and some of it is fantasy.
Some of it is fantasy. I don't think so.
I would say maybe her name wasn't Madeline.
Yeah, I would say like reading direct text messages.
It was Schmadlin'. It's crazy to think that it's been 7 years since she's produced a comprehensive piece of work like this. Obviously, she was such a huge icon in the 2000s. This is fresh. This is new. It's something different. But she's really kind of seems to be going out there with this. Like she's back on TikTok. She's doing a lot of promo. And I see there last week that it was also announced that she was going to perform the new album in its entirety in theatres across the UK next year. So kind of do like a live performance.
Well, I suppose with a name like West End Girls, she'd have to perform it.
Yeah, very interesting. And I also see as well she's going to go back on tour and she has 13 concerts planned. So this is really, really her being like, I'm back,
yeah.
Girlies. You know,
she is very much back with a bang. And this album is insanely good. There are so many great songs on it for varying reasons. Some of them are really sad. Some of them are really raw. And then more of them are just tongue in cheek. You're bopping along. You're having a great time. And you're not really thinking too much about it. You're laughing at some of the things she has to say.
Ava, you are on Irish Beats again tonight. Fantastic show, if I may say so myself.
Why, thank you
very
much.
Where you get to showcase all of the up-and-coming Irish artists and artists as well from the southeast. Anything catch your ear there of late? Any new artists that you've come across that you think people should check out?
The song that has been on repeat in my ears for the last, I'd say, week and a half, maybe 2 weeks. I'm not too sure when the release date was. is the latest one in from The Ran. It's called Some Say the Devil is Dead. It's fantastic.
Ava Summers, thank you so much for joining me on the Sunday Grill this morning.
Thanks, Aoife. See you later.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat.
One of the most hotly anticipated biopics is out now in cinemas. Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere. On the cusp of global superstardom, New Jersey rocker Bruce Springsteen struggles to reconcile the pressures of success with the ghosts of his past. Let's take a listen.
Trying to find some real in all the noise. You always do.
Any Springsteen fans in the building?
I like that song. I really, actually, that's Born to Run is probably one of my favourite songs. But then apart from that, Springsteen is kind of a dude that's, I know he's beloved in America, but over here, I don't think he's the same
level, I think so. I think he's a real storyteller. Anyway, if you haven't gathered already, we're joined, as we are weekly, by Brian Griffin, the movie mogul himself, review the new Bruce Springsteen biopic, Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere. Well, did this deliver?
Do you know what? I went into this knowing exactly zero about it. I know Jeremy Allen White was in it from The Bear, and he's also in Shameless, but that was literally exactly everything that I knew about it. I knew Bruce Springsteen, like if you were like Bruce Springsteen songs, I know Dancing in the Dark, Born in the USA, Born to Run. Don't know anything else. The movie pretty much starts with him performing Born to Run because that's one of his early songs. And it's all about the period after his rise nationally in America, but like not superstar.
Not superstardom, yeah.
But basically this time that he had where he was just lost and like living this kind of abyss of what am I actually doing myself. So it's a section of his life. It's not about his life story. It's not about how he got into music. It's not about the first thing. But it's about a certain period in his life. And it's the story of that. It's like a folk song, but as a movie, which I thought was very fitting.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the tale of Bruce Springsteen before he became a name, you know, before he was Bruce Springsteen. In one way, it's like this sad reflection of how, like, when creative people just kind of suffer with this whole thing of this kind of darkness that's always kind of lingering and the need to create and the want to create, but this darkness behind them that like, what's the point of doing anything at all? So in one way it's like, damn, he feels like that. And in another way it's like, I feel like that sometimes. So it's relatable.
So you really resonated with, I guess, the whole theme and message in the movie. In terms of this being a biopic and it just being based on a very small portion of his life, in the grand scheme of his life,
yeah,
you obviously think that that worked.
Yeah, well, look, it's more so a case of the tale of how he went from being this Bruce to this Bruce. You know, it's like how this, like a certain album became what it is and where those songs came from, because like one of the songs is directly recorded in his bedroom and it's like how he came to just record that song in his bedroom like with bad equipment, but like because he wanted to capture the emotion of it the way it was, that's the way it was done.
You know, when it comes to writing songs and listening to songs, I'm all about the lyrics and I love the kind of story behind the songs. Do we get like a taste of that in the movie?
Yeah, like some of them, like the words for, let's say, Nebraska itself, the words of how he came across the words that he wrote are basically delivered to you. It's like the one of them is about this murder happens in Starkweather or something like that, or maybe he's the guy that did it. But Martin Sheen, it's this like series or movie that Martin Sheen is in. He's watching that and that's what the inspiration that it gives him.
Cool.
So it's like it's based on these things. But I think it's supposed to show that there's a darkness in America that people don't want to highlight when they're talking about these great things. And then Born in the USA came from the same time. So he wrote Born in the USA in the same stretch. And then the way he recorded it then, like that was just like generational. Born in the USA is probably one of the most iconic songs ever, like, you know. The cast itself, though, when it comes to the actual movie part of it, like Jeremy Allen White is a great actor. Like he's fantastic in The Bear. Have you seen The Bear?
No, I haven't, but I've seen clips of it. Isn't that so bad?
He's top tier. He's top tier in The Bear. And then like the rest of the cast is like generational character actors. So Jeremy Strong is like probably the second main role in it, so you probably know him from Succession, or he's in The Big Short as well. I think that's probably what I always know him from. And then Paul Walter Hauser, he's in a load of things lately as well. I think he's great. And then there was another person as well, Can't think of, wait, no, I'm going to double check. But it's a case of they got people that were just, they're just fantastic
perfect
actors.
Perfect for the role. But
Stephen Graham. Stephen Graham plays his dad.
Oh, wow.
Stephen Graham is one of the best actors.
Adolescence.
Going. Yeah. Well, he's just everything Stephen Graham has ever been in. He has just been like scene stealing. And even in this, there's like, there's a, he's a horrible person, but you can tell that there's just, he's trying not to be, do you know? Mm. And there's some lovely scenes. Like he's this kind of bad presence throughout the whole thing, but there's, he just acts it brilliantly. Like, you know, I thought it was great.
Casting, performance, all of that, top notch.
Yeah, like it was definitely people that they want. They want good actors to be play good roles. It was something different. It's like you see biopics and they're like, oh, this is how we wrote this song. It's like, no, this is how he felt writing this album.
How was the production in the movie? Because obviously as well, Bruce Springsteen being like a major live performer. I mean, he's played in Kilkenny in the past few years.
That's what
he's
I kept
played
thinking about.
In the RDS. He regularly plays there because, did you know his daughter is like a champion show jumper and competes in the RDS all that kind of crap?
His wife
is Irish as well, random.
Didn't know that.
Anyway, aside from all the Bruce Springsteen facts, his gigs are known to be epic. They're known to be hours long, like you're talking 4 hours. Taylor Swift, he's done it well before Taylor Swift did her 3.5 hour live set, whatever. He's done more.
Yeah.
Does that come across in the movie, or do we see glimpses of that, or is that demonstrated in any way?
So Born to Run is performed at the start, and that's like a live version of it as a concert, and then the whole movie itself is how the fact that he, like, he does play gigs, but like in a local place. So it's like us going into Waterford City and getting, have seen like Chris Martin playing inside there. Like, it's just like he just plays local gig and then he takes a break from all the national press and stuff, because like in the 80s you could, like, there's this constant barrage of things, everyone has to be online all the time now, and he kind of just goes back to it. Then he didn't want to tour, but then he goes back and he finally tours like maybe a year afterwards or something. But it's literally about how,
it's like an extreme creative process, obviously, that he went down.
It's kind of, do you know what, it's kind of the opposite of the Bob Dylan one, because the Bob Dylan one was how he became a folk star and then what, like, realized that he wanted to just experiment with a different element of his life and got into rock and roll. And then Bruce Springsteen was like, he was a rock and roll star and then realized that he wanted to become a bit of a folk singer, do you know? So it's an interesting thing. I just thought it was an interesting way of looking at the creative process.
Yeah. So in terms of this movie, you don't have to be a fan, because you wouldn't be necessarily a fan, would be aware of Bruce Springsteen, obviously, but you can really enjoy this as a complete outsider.
Yeah, I think if you are a fan and you always like identified with these songs, I think that would be a beautiful moment for you. But I knew nothing. I didn't know, like, because he has a love interest and I was like, I could be his woman forever now. I don't know what happens. I didn't know his daughter's a show jumper. I didn't know any of this. Like, you know, so I go in with zero knowledge. So I think, I don't know, it's the best way to be is go in and just enjoy yourself.
Out of 10?
I'll give it like a 7 or 8, to be fair.
Okay.
Like, it's a good movie. Honestly, it's the kind of movie that I normally wouldn't like. But I'm just so obsessed with stuff about the creative process, because obviously, like, I do this.
That's your
here,
interest.
So that's, yeah, that's where my kind of hyper focus is. So anything about seeing somebody else suffer with the highs and lows of said creative process.
And how do you think it compares to, I mean, this is one of many biopics in the past few years. How do you think it compares to the rest of them? Because we had the Elton John biopic, we had Bohemian Rhapsody about the life of Freddie Mercury.
There's a lot less monkeys in it compared to the Robbie Williams one.
But, good one.
Yeah. No, like, I think I always like them when they get the like they tell the story through how that person would tell it. So the thing that people used to give out about the Bohemian Rhapsody one, but I think, like, if anything, it wasn't jazzy enough. Do you know, like Rocket Man was told with sparkles and explosions and everything. It's like how Elton John would tell a story. Do you know, like, this is just the hard truth of what it was like from, and the songs reflect that. And I feel like Bruce Springsteen is a pretty much this is what life is type dude. So I think that reflects him nicely, you know? So I think it's nice when things are told through the voice of the person that's saying it.
Okay, that's Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere, out in cinemas now. Brian Griffin, thank you so much.
No problem, Aoife Kearns.
The Sunday Grill on Beat.
It's the Sunday Grill and we have Donal O'Donoghue from the RTE Guide here with us this morning to talk all things telly, TV shows, Netflix, the whole shebang. How are you, Donal?
Great, Eva. Great. Great. In fact, one of the shows we'll be talking about this morning, I'm still recovering from the trauma of sort of participating in it. And maybe you should start there, actually. It's on from Tuesday, Squid Game, The Challenge, which is basically, you know, you've seen Squid Game, the drama series. This is the reality show spin-off of it, you know. And about last January, I was invited with a bunch of journalists from the UK and the US to participate in the actual games in an undisclosed place in London. We couldn't tell anybody where we were, what we've been doing, blah, blah, blah. We had to sign all these documents, etc. But you're dressed up and you actually participate in the actual game. You're filmed. The guys, the guards are there. You do the games. And I'll tell you one thing, Aoife, it is nerve-wracking. It's nerve-wracking. And it's also, you all start hating the people you're competing against. You know, the right. Americans. Oh, no. Yeah, it's amazing what happens. The actual show itself, the reality show itself, the second season starts this Tuesday, bingeable on Netflix. And basically, I don't know if you know the idea of it. The same as the drama series. There's, in this case, there's $4.56 million up for grabs. And how that is done is there's 456 contestants, and when one person is eliminated, another $10,000 is put into the pot. So eventually, in the end, there can be only one. So the eventual winner, the single person, the last person standing, gets to win the $4.56 million. In my case, there was no $4.56 million. I'll tell you,
unfortunately,
yeah. But we did play some games, including one called the five in a team, and we're all tied onto each other's legs. You know, basically like three-legged race, but this is like a six-legged race, and we have to go around this track and do various things, which was like impossible. My simple thing, Aoife, was to do a house of cards, you know, like to stack two levels of cards above each other. Now, you think that's simple, right? I could not do it. Well, it's very hard doing it tight to six or five out of four other people, but I was like sweating, and I was going, oh my God. If you fail, you die, there's a squib in your chest and it just explodes and you have to drop down dead.
As you were saying there as well, you even started to hate others that you were competing alongside. So can you only imagine what you would be like if there was €4 million or dollars at stake?
Yeah, there's nothing at stake here, just your pride or whatever it was.
Speaking of shows where people start to hate each other at a certain point, the Celebrity Traitors. So the finale of Celebrity Traitors on BBC One on Thursday at 9 o'clock. We're absolutely obsessed with Traitors following on from Traitors Ireland. Tell us a little bit about who's in the finale, who's in the running for the UK celebrity version of the show.
Well, I don't know if you've been following. I've been dipping in and out of this actually. Jonathan Ross, he's one of the traitors. He was very good, but he's gone. Alan Carr actually is so nobody's guessed that he's a traitor. Basically, I don't know how he does it. Like it's some psychological mind game. He kind of diverts everything away from himself, and he's a traitor, but he's still in the mix, you know, for the finale. So that's gotta be interesting.
It is kind of interesting as well, because people think that they know someone, and a celebrity that has this image of being the nice guy being a traitor and all that
absolutely.
Kind of thing. I'm sure as well.
Case in point, Alan Carr, exactly.
Yes.
Chatty Alan Carr, chatty, right. it's trust that guy. You want to count your fingers after you shake hands with him, you know, seriously.
We also are just after Halloween, so we are still a little bit spooky. And as I heard earlier on today, Samhain actually only starts on the 10th of November, so we're allowed to be spooky for another while. And I believe there's a new thriller called All Her Own Fault coming out on Friday. It'll be available on Sky Arts and Now TV. Tell us a little bit about that.
First of all, I should say this is based on a novel by Andrea Mara, an Irish crime fiction writer. She wrote this novel a number of years back, which I read at the time, and it's got a brilliant premise, because basically the premise is this mother drops her child off to a house, a neighbor's house, basically for whatever, you know, for a party, and then she arrives later at 14 Tudor Grove expecting to pick up her young son Milo from the play date. But the woman who answers the doors isn't the mother she recognized. In fact, the person who answered doors has no idea, never heard of her son, never seen her son, and the mother's going, what is going on here? So the premise is brilliant, actually. It's also interesting that the character who plays the mother actually is played by Sarah Snook. You remember Sarah Snook from Succession?
The daughter in Succession.
It's got a really good cast, actually. It's a psychological thriller, obviously. The premise says it's a psychological thriller. So you got Dakota Fanning in there, Michael Pena, Jay Ellis, Jake Lacey. Very good cast. I definitely will watch this, I think. It looks really good.
Speaking of kind of creepy series, Stranger Things 5. So this is the finale of Stranger Things, hugely popular. And God, it must be nearly 10 years now since we first got the first season of Stranger Things. It has created huge careers for some of its cast. One big name, obviously, Millie Bobby Brown, who plays Eleven. And I believe the trailer for Stranger Things 5 dropped just earlier on this week, and Netflix have announced that the first volume will be out on November 26th, followed by a second on Christmas Day, which I was saying is quite, that tends to be quite popular now that you'll have it in two halves. You might have a few episodes, you know, in November, a few episodes a month later or whatever.
Yes, absolutely. And Stranger Things, I think, have taken this to the nth degree. In fact, you said, I think the strange things about Stranger Things, actually, Aoife, is how the hell can they keep the kids that age all the time? Because they're obviously still, they haven't aged, obviously. It's a bit like the in-betweeners. Remember the in-betweeners? They were like school kids for like 20 years. So I don't know how to manage that. But yeah, you're right. It made a big star of Millie Bobby Brown. David Harbour as well, who plays the sheriff, he's a big star, and I'll be going back at, and it kind of resurrected the career as well of Winona Ryder, and it put Kate Bush back in the charts, back at that number one, back in the charts and the music charts as well, running up that hill. It's I mean, people love the show. The Duffer Brothers co-created it, and it has lots of imitators out there. And as you say, it's not just two parts, I believe it's three parts, isn't it? Three final parts, like, it's really like stretching it out. The final finale is actually, I don't know when that's happening, part three, but the second part is on Christmas Day. Kind of an alternative for Christmas, isn't it?
Yeah.
Watching that on Christmas
Day. It's like a few years ago, I watched The Banshees of Inisherin on Christmas Day. It was not a good choice. Finish Christmas night on that note, not great.
It's got its own unique horror as well, which has kind of been much imitated since then.
In terms of what's live on TV tonight, I believe something will be on that's very family friendly and a great show for all of the sports enthusiasts out there.
Yeah, the news. No, sorry. I'm sorry. It's Ireland's Fittest Families back, actually. Yeah, the new series. It's 13th series. Can you believe that?
Crazy.
Oh God. Anyway, it's unbelievable. Yeah, Anna Geary, Donal O'Callaghan, and the reigning champ mentor, Davy Fitzgerald, they're all back in the game. And this time they've got three new coaches this time to make it a six-way battle. So previously three-way, now it's six-way. So the new coaches are Paralympian swimming champion Ellen Keane, the former Dublin GA All-Star, Michael Dora McCauley, and the Irish rugby icon Andrew Trimble. And the opening one tonight, we had the Carr family, the Walsh family, and the McClimmon family, and the Byrne family, all battling to take in the first heat of this Ireland's Fittest Family. It's amazing how, I mentioned earlier Squid Game, the challenge, but this gets quite heated as well, doesn't it? And the coaches really get into it. Well, they have to, I suppose, because of so much at stake in some respects.
It's a great show, and the coaches really do get into it. I would not like to have Davy Fitz roaring at me, I'll tell you, when I'm trying to, I don't know, climb up a wall or like climb through mud or whatever it might be. Also, for the hurling and Gaelic football enthusiasts, another show that we can't miss next Friday, I believe.
Yeah, Hurling and Football Awards. The PWC All-Star Awards, I think it's the full title, 2025, is at 7:30 p.m. on Friday night. The great Marty Morrissey and the great Joanne Cantwell are co-hosting a night of fun from the Dublin's RDS. It's funny because you mentioned off air, Aoife, it's so true. A lot of people watch this, not just for the awards, who's going to win what, because sometimes you kind of know in advance what's going to happen in that respect, but who's with whom, and what are the glam and the gooners, and who's dressed up. Forget about the guys, they're all just dressed in black tie, boring. But you want to see the scenes kind of stuff.
Yeah, and then in the hurling, Tipperary won the All-Ireland this year, so plenty of nominations for Tip and Kilkenny, and I think Waterford might have had a nod, one or two nods as well, so we'll be all glued to that next Friday. Donal, thank you so much. I'm in again next week, so I'll chat to you then.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.